Welcome back to The Grapevine, Michael Warren Thomas. And we pre-recorded this interview yesterday down at a special property on Seneca Lake. It's going to be the future Paul Hobbs Vineyard, along with a partner who is visiting, so we can talk to both of them and get the scoop on what's happening in the Finger Lakes. And Paul grew up not that far from the Finger Lakes in Newfane, near north of Buffalo. And when did you start thinking, Paul, that you might want to do a project in New York State? Maybe not even in the Finger Lakes, but in New York State somewhere.
Well, interestingly, I had thought about that when I first left New York to go to California to study wine. But that was back in 1975. My father was very interested in, as we had fruit farms in that in the Niagara County area and still do today, and my father was very interested in me coming back to the farm as we had been planting. I was a college student, I was helping plant vineyards during the course of the summers for my father and for the family. And so the idea was that I would go to California, study wine, work a little bit in the industry there, and then come back and build a winery. So I had that early thought, but then sort of got caught up in what I was doing on the West Coast. And so it was only recently, I would say maybe 4 or 5 years ago, that I seriously began and thought that maybe now is the moment.
What was the drought of the Finger Lakes? Was it awards the Finger Lakes is winning? Is it the press reading about it, hearing about it? What kinds of things really attracted your attention to the potential for what can be done here?
Well, initially, first of all, I should say that I probably came to wine, if there was one wine that influenced my interest in wine more than any other, I think it was the wines from the Mosel and the Rheingau region, the German wines. So as a young neophyte wine, but I first learned to love wine through those wines. And I think I've long thought that if there's any area in the United States that has the possibility of succeeding in making Riesling at that level, as they do in Germany, it would be here in the Finger Lakes. So that was my first attraction. Then the natural beauty, the conditions. And my father often spoke about the great work of Constantin Frank and Herman Wiemer and so on, and other producers who he visited, but I never had a chance to visit. And all of that work, so it was sort of like romanticized in my mind to some degree through my father. And so I would say those were the main ingredients. But of course, in recent years, things have clearly developed and a lot more winemaking, great winemaking has come. And then I think I tasted particularly one of the Wiemer wines that truly turned my head. It was like an epiphany for me. I said, that's, they can do it there. They're doing it.
Time to come visit the Finger Lakes more often. Paul Hobbs is with us. He makes wine in California and Argentina, has a project in Armenia, and does wine consulting all over the world, and is going to shine a pretty big spotlight here on the Finger Lakes with this announcement that he's going to be is starting a vineyard here. Land is cleared. And when did you decide to have a partner in this, and how did you find your partner?
Well, you know, curiously, life has its little turns, and over 14 years ago, I made a visit to the Mosel. I hadn't visited in many years, and so I went to my New York, New Jersey importer who handled the Terry Theis book for the U.S.
And Terry Theis book he's an importer, a distributor, and the book is the list of wines for.
Yes.
It's not a book you read for nighttime reading.
Yeah, sorry, that's right. And this was in November of 2000, so I turned to Michael Skernick, and they put me in touch with a couple of people, and one of those people, Johanna Selbach, was, and his wife Barbara, in the year of November 2000. In that moment, I visited their property And I really fell in love with their wines, and they treated me so well. We had a wonderful roasted chicken dinner at their place. The Mosel was flooding, I think, or had just flooded or about to flood or something of that effect. So it was incredibly fascinating, the whole experience. And it was a dark and brooding night. I remember the night that I was there. It was raining quite heavily. And I left, I think, just before it flooded the next day. And Johannes had told me that he had to go down with a snorkel and save his barrels in his caves. So, but I, you know, at that point I had no inclination or I didn't have any idea that I was just there on a trip, and we befriended each other. So that's how it began.
And Johannes, you've been to the Finger Lakes a number of times. Your mother was here a long, long time ago, and that's a pretty cool story.
My mother was here in 1953. She was an exchange student in Ashtabula County, Ohio, grape-growing county, in Geneva, Ohio, to be precise. And she loved her year in the United States. And as part of that year, her host family took her on trips. And she still remembers fondly the visits to the Finger Lakes, in particular Watkins Glen and Seneca Lake. And it's ironic, when she came with me and some of my staff here in November, oh, in October of last year, she brought some of the letters she sent home from the Finger Lakes. And so it was very special for her to come here. So to come back to her year in the States in 53, she really thoroughly enjoyed that year going to high school. And that experience really sowed the seed in the family, the later family she was going to raise. Me and my three brothers all spent at least 1 year in an American educational institution, be it university or high school. In fact, my third brother went to the same high school and graduated from the same high school in Geneva, Ohio, like she did. Mm-hmm. One went to Sonoma High, one went to George Washington University, and I met my now wife, back then a student at Penn State. So we all have an American educational history. I, in fact, stayed for a little time, worked in New York City for a PR firm that handled German wines, amongst other consumer goods. And in those days, when I worked in New York, I made a couple trips up to Cornell to help Professor here at Cornell with his wine class. And given that opportunity, I toured the Finger Lakes, and back then in the mid-80s fell in love with the Finger Lakes, the landscape, and also some of the wines, one of them Constantin Frank's wines and the other one Wiemer's wines. And I have been back since and always, always adored the Finger Lakes, you know, cool climate wines. When I couldn't go to the Finger Lakes themselves, the Grand Central Oyster Bar at Grand Central was a great place to taste New York State and Finger Lakes Riesling. So I tried to keep up. And when Paul approached me last year, it was an easy yes. Number one, because we know and respect each other. Number two, because I really have had a secret admiration for the potential. Also the people, everything here is something that really, really merits an investment and more attention.
And now the vineyards look down on Watkins Glen. I mean, you can walk down the road to Watkins Glen. You don't need a car. It's that close.
Cool. And very exciting. I mean, this is really, I think, from a business viewpoint, we're well established in Germany. We have been making wines in the Mosel for a little over 400 years. We're specialized in Riesling. We know cold climate wine growing. And so this is a challenge, but it's a challenge with a very positive outlook. If you pull a California Mosel expertise and you go to a region that has great potential, seemingly great potential, and that has done great strides in the past, say, decade, it's really exciting. We don't know all the risks, but we're willing to take the risks, and I think we can contribute to the region and have some fun at the same time.
I've heard a Selbach Oster and the winery, you make something like 35 different kinds, different bottlings of Riesling?
We actually make more. There is two businesses in the family. One is what we call Weingut, which would be the equivalent of a domain in France. That is, you make wine that you grow on your own property, estate grown, produced, and bottled. And then we have always had and still do have what the French would call a négociation. We purchase grapes and juice and make wines from that. If you take the two combined, we will make between 60 and 70 different Rieslings each year.
Each year. That's what differentiates them? Is it region? Is it specific vineyards, lots?
It is all of the above. As you may know, and I don't want to bore you and your listeners to the intricacies of the German classification system, but we base our grapes on the ripeness at the time of harvest. So you have different gradations of ripeness, which give you different degrees of concentration. Plus, we can make them in different styles, i.e. dry, medium dry, fruity, and sweet. And if you take that in conjunction with a whole bunch of different vineyards, single vineyards, you get a huge, choice from which you can make hundreds of wines. We chose to make between 60 and 70. And you get a lot of regional distinction and meaning of place. And if you go to where I come from, we've been making wines, the region has been making wines for 2,000 years, uninterrupted, no prohibition. And many families have been doing it for several generations. So place has a meaning, and different places produce different qualities of grapes. And if you make the wines in a hands-off approach, you can actually smell and taste the difference. And this is what keeps the fun in making just one grape Riesling. And this is where you get a lot of excitement on behalf of wine consumers and connoisseurs. And that is why you, if you like fine wines, you endeavor into making many, many different wines. We could make just two wines. It would be commercially much more, shall we say, easy, but it would be much more boring too.
We're talking with Johannes Selbach. He's visiting the Finger Lakes to map out what they're going to do on the vineyard property. Has been cleared somewhere in the range of 40 acres, and now is largely cleared, and we'll find out about planting. But first of all, I was really in tasting your wines, and Selbach Oster wines are available in Rochester. They're at many wine stores, and certainly the stores can get more of them if people are interested in trying more of the different varieties. But they're often very low in alcohol, and that really, obviously I'm not wine savvy enough about the world. I was shocked that you're making wines that are 8.5% alcohol that are lovely, and they are lots of flavor, but you don't need the alcohol.
That is the secret of cool climate. You don't, and especially with speaking Riesling here. Riesling is a fickle grape that needs a long growing season, that needs moderate climate. It doesn't like to be cooked. It likes to be simmered. And I think if I take my experience from home, where we have low pH soils, where we have long growing seasons, where it's cool in relation to the world's wine growing regions, I find similarities here in the Finger Lakes, and this is what I hope we shall see we can do in the Finger Lakes too. So long growing season means you get a lot of flavor without high alcohol. And this is the true secret when you look at the Rieslings of the world. Germany, and in particular my part of Germany, is where you have those conditions. And indeed, you can make wines with 7.5% alcohol that age 30, 40, 50 years and actually gain with age and don't fall apart. And if you look at the wine world today, the average alcohol is 14% or not far from there. So you get a huge selection of high alcohol wines, but you don't get much in terms of below 10%. And many people are surprised how layered and multifaceted those wines are. And you can drink a bottle without even feeling it, and you can drink a glass more without being hit. And in today's environment, where people pay attention to their intake, and also in today's restaurants, where you have a lot of fine food on the table that doesn't want to be hit with high alcohol and oak, I think Riesling has a great future ahead, and we already see that.
Paul Hobbs is here as well, along with Johannes Selbach. They're making their plans for the vineyard and what's going to happen in 2014. So, Paul, the trees are down. The area is pretty much ready to go in many ways. But will you be able to plant this spring in 2014?
That's really what Johannes and I are doing here today and tomorrow, is looking at what we will be able to do precisely in the coming year. And I mean, for us, securing the material that we need to plant may be difficult this year. That may need to be prepped this year. So most of the planting will probably occur in 15. This year, we're doing site prep, which means land prep, as you mentioned, clearing as appropriate, and then doing all any erosion control, soil preparation, and getting the land ready to receive the plantings. So I think we're imagining that this year we're going to be relatively small and very tiny amount of plants going in, maybe even only in the magnitude of a couple of thousand, with 15 being where we would plant maybe the 50% of the property and finishing that planting in 16. I think that's kind of how we see this coming together at the moment.
Now, of course, there's always the option to buy grapes and make wine without necessarily growing your own fruit or waiting for your fruit to mature. Is that an option that you're considering?
It is, and of course, we would be looking for a certain quality level. Of course, at that high level of quality that we'd be interested in purchasing, those that would be more difficult to find, and we're not even sure then. I mean, what this site will produce and what we expect to do here might be quite different from anything that's been done in the region. And so, nevertheless, buying grapes and working with local vineyards and also just getting experience or helping develop some of our generating more knowledge about how things work here would be the advantage of that. So I think if we can find high-quality grapes, and we'll be looking at some vineyards tomorrow with that in mind, could get us kick-started. Otherwise, if we don't do that, we're going to be 3 or 4, maybe 5 years down the road before we have anything meaningful to produce.
Well, hopefully you'll find some good grapes. It seems like one of the biggest issues is, you know, often winemakers say the wines are made in the vineyard, and with generally low-priced wines in the Finger Lakes, and Rieslings are at $15 a bottle. They're less than that. There's very few Rieslings at top 20. That it's difficult to have the money to do the management in the vineyard that you're used to doing in the Mosel, Johannes. And so there's a lot of potential that can be done in changing the way the grapes are grown and the just the pruning, right?
Remains to be seen, but we certainly have ideas that we want to implement, and we hope that it will show in the grapes and in the wine. I'm not a prophet, but we we have some experience and a track record, and I think with a combined knowledge and willingness to invest to make it work, I think it will work.
So maybe not a prophet, but you're optimistic.
We're optimistic. First, the work and the investment, and then we shall see what the results will show. But I'm very optimistic. I mean, if you look at what's already happening in the Finger Lakes, there's some excellent wine being made. So if you extrapolate from that, I think the potential is very, very high.
So are your colleagues in Germany and the Mosel in particular talking all about the fact that you're here and you're investing here, or they really don't know yet, maybe?
Nobody knows. This is the I have not talked about it to anybody but you. This is the first time we revealed this. When Paul approached me earlier this year, we agreed we'll do a 50-50 partnership. We also agreed that we would keep it under the hat until it was really time to talk about it. Now you are the first one who will get the official version.
I'm honored. It's exciting. I think it is a tipping point for the Finger Lakes to have. It was a huge tipping point to have Paul come here, but to have you collaborate with the Mosel and bring that knowledge is just, it makes that spotlight even bigger on on the Finger Lakes. And Paul, the if it takes a couple of years to put the vineyards in, that'll give you some time to go and taste more Finger Lakes wines and get to know the region even more.
Indeed, and I'd like to do that more with Johannes. We've both, unfortunately, not been able to. We've navigated some of the wine roads around here independently. So one day, I hope that we can do that tasting together. But I think there's a lot to be learned. There's been a lot of great work already done. So we want to see what we can learn from that. That would even strengthen our own project.
What was it about this site that really drew your attention? From talking to your brother David, it seemed like you'd driven around the Finger Lakes quite a bit, and it was really at the end of that drive that you went by this property. And what was it that you saw that attracted you?
Well, frankly, I was looking for a site that was reminiscent of what sites I'd seen in the Mosel. And so I was looking for some steepness, but primarily for shale or slaties. And this southern part of the lake is Lake Seneca. We chose for that reason. It has the inclination that I was looking for, more steep slope. And so we spent the better part of 2 years doing that research. And as there are several lakes to research, it took quite an effort, and I could only devote a small amount of time each visit. So David and I, and I think you might recall, but we worked hard to find the proper site here. So we're pretty excited about it. And as we've cleared the site and opened it up, it's become even more spectacular than what we first had imagined. So as Johannes has pointed out, it's very exciting. And there's, my brother has dug some pits, or soil pits, so we've had a chance. We will be bringing experts in to do the soil analysis, which would both be chemistry and compositional, structural aspects of the soil. So, and Johannes is an expert, and his expertise will be vital to the project in terms of what clones to plant, what rootstocks, that kind of thing, where I really lack that expertise. So that'll be an important part that he brings to this equation.
Yeah, well, Johannes, my impression of the Mosel is that there's not a lot of room for clearing land and planting more grapes. Is that safe to say?
It is very safe to say. pretty much everything that is plantable for prime land has been planted for several hundred years. So the vineyards that were new were planted on, not so well-suited soils, and most of them have, been planted in the 1960s and 70s. The world-famous ones have been planted for several hundred years. So clearing will happen if we put together the many, many tiny parcels that have evolved over centuries of splitting properties by means of inheritance. Long German word called Flurbereinigung. It means the cleaning up of the vineyards. This is a program that has only started in the 1950s and has been done successfully in, I would say, 80% of the river valley. If you imagine the average size of a winery in the Mosel in the 1970s and 80s being 2.5 hectares, picture that, 6 acres, or maybe 6.5 acres, that was the average size. And it was split up amongst at the very least, a dozen parcels. So you moved a crew to work maybe 80 to 150 vines, then you crawled up the slope to another 250 vines, and you traveled another 20 minutes to the next vineyard. This is how it was for a long, long time. Now, in the last 40 years, with government sponsorship, these vineyards have been put together and consolidated, which is how we arrived at, kind of like shaping the hills a little bit, because we now have bigger lots or plots, and now for the first time in several hundred years we have road access in some of the vineyards, where we can put a tractor on top of a vineyard and work with a winch. What you have here is paradise, because most of the vineyards here you can farm like on a farm. In my part of the world, most of the vineyards used to be only reachable on foot, and it was manual labor. And so the programs that we've done in the last 40 years. And in fact, the last ones are just finishing, is putting in roads and making smaller vineyards into bigger ones. And so what we're doing here at Lollis is similar, only here it was really forest and a lot more clearing to do. But so based on the experience of the last 30, 40 years with our program called Flurbereinigung, we have a good sense of what's needed to replant. We also have a good sense of rootstock and clones that go in. If you go into the old days, nobody did clonal selection, and the clonal selection is only 100 years old. And there's also different trends. You can say the 1970s were producing larger volumes. The crop was important. Nowadays, quality is important. So the focus for us is definitely on quality and having diversity. And this is what we're planning on putting in here in the property.
All right. And Paul, what is it that you love about Riesling as a wine to drink?
Well, I think Johannes expressed some of the great properties of Riesling earlier. The low alcohol is clearly, it makes it just fun to drink because you don't have to worry about anything in terms of that aspect. Nevertheless, I think it's just its true charm, its depth, and what I really love about Rieslings is what happens when they age. That's what I get crazy for, the older ones. So, and Johannes brought that up, that they can age 30, 40, 50 years or beyond. And we believe that that's something that can happen here. We're as cold or colder than the region that Johannes is working in, the Mosel. And that means great acidity. We'll have to see how the climate plays out, but we have a wonderful moderating lake, so that should be advantageous. It appears we've got fantastic soils, so we should have the good natural acidities that we're looking for. So if we farm at a high level, we should also be able to make wines that have this terrific ageability, which does add all the nuances and layers of complexity to Riesling. It's one of the most exciting grapes in that regard. I mean, there's very few varietals in the world that can do that. And so, and the other thing that I think that's quite stunning is how many different styles, as Johannes speaking, how many different types of wines they can make. And even from this site, I mean, that appears to be something very exciting for us to be able to do here, is to make many different styles. So it has such a huge range. And so, of style, so we're very excited to get to work and to try that as well.
Any ideas on when a visitor center, tasting rooms of sorts, would be built? I hear perhaps maybe some of your wines from other parts of the world where you own wineries.
Well, yes. I think Johannes and I have been discussing this, and one of the things that we have found from our earlier visits is that people here in this part of the world, as they still are in the West Coast, very interested in education, wine education. There's so much to learn. So we want to build a facility where we can do that and draw upon the expertise that we have in many countries, bring experts here, and have them meet people and give seminars and so on, do tastings. So we want to make this more of a center of learning and expertise in development of the area. So we want to contribute in that way, any way that we can. In terms of when we would get something off the ground, I would imagine, and we're still noodling on this, but I would say we're probably 3 or 4 years at the least, because our first grapes would not be bearing. So probably in 17, 18, 19, somewhere in that neighborhood, we would hope to build a facility.
Well, I taste all those wines from Argentina and California sooner than that, but they are available in stores. Cross Barn is pretty widely available, right?
Oh, yes. Cross Barn is growing quite strongly. It's our brand from, or sort of the sister brand of Paul Hobbs, and with wines from Sonoma, as you know, from mainly the Sonoma Coast, and also Napa Cabernet and Sonoma Valley Cabernet. And then all our wines from Argentina. Eventually, we're on more or less the same track with a little project in Armenia And we'll be, I'm launching a new project. In fact, we were having that meeting here. This has become the epicenter between all our my projects, Asia Minor and European continent. It seems to be a pretty good meeting place. So we were meeting on Friday with Bertrand Vigoureux from Chateau Haute-Serre and Chateau Mercouez on the project that we have with Malbec there. And we would hope that all the, you know, what's exciting, and I think what I understand Governor Cuomo is a big fan of the region and promoting the wines of this region. And so it's very exciting, but we hope to be able to sell and make available wines from all these projects through our tasting center. So that may prompt us to get an earlier start, but it would seem kind of odd maybe to have a tasting room, yet nothing in production yet. So, but if we get the grapes that you were talking about earlier, Michael, we might be able to do that. We might be able to get an earlier start.
Sooner the better, as far as the Finger Lakes goes. And hopefully, Johannes, your wines, I'd love to see the 65 different bottlings of Riesling all lined up so I could taste them. But more difficult to get those into a tasting room like that maybe here?
Well, they're in New York. Our importer, Michael Skonig Wines, has a very, very good selection of our wines. So the availability stateside is there, but, you know, it may be a little bit too much to have everything up here in the Finger Lakes. But certainly they're in New York, in the state of New York, and I see some interest here in the region. Same at home in my little provincial region. People are very, very interested in tasting what else is there. So we, in my hometown of 2,500 people, we have a very good gastronomy. We have one restaurant that has 100 wines by the glass and has a wine list of more than 1,000 wines. A lot of Riesling, but not just exclusively Rieslings. And the winemakers go there because this is a great showcase to taste through what they make and what they're interested in. And I sense there is a similar development here. People are very interested, and I think this will be, and that's why it's so exciting. This will be cross-pollination, which will work both, will work for the consumer, for the growers locally, and also the outsiders.
New York City is not far away. People can come here pretty easily. Like 9 million people down there that will discover the Finger Lakes and how beautiful it is. I hear you and your family, your brothers in particular, love to fish and hunt, and there's quite a bit of that around here.
Looking forward to it. My brothers are already bugging me. When can they come?
I thought you were taking a photo of a deer tracks as we were wandering outside.
Yes, just as proof that they're around. They don't believe me. What you don't have here, which is good, it's very, very good. You don't have a wild boar. That's our number one problem at home because they really like grapes and they do great damage. But I'm told that turkey and deer are the big nemesis here. So given the opportunity, I would like to take a shot.
And you've got some fish in the lakes here too. You got streams and lakes, and I don't know if there's any fish in the stream right here that's kind of small, but Seneca Lake has a lot of big fish in it. And people can look at Hector Falls to see what is under the soil here. Hector Falls is very close, just north of the Hobbs property. So what is this going to be called? Is that been decided yet, Paul?
Well, we have a working title. Today it's just called JPV. That's Johannes and Paul Vineyards. We are toying with an idea of being called Saalbach and Hobbs. I don't know if that has anything to do
Calvin
with
and Hobbs.
Calvin and Hobbs.
Yeah, I got that.
But it could be that or Saalbach Hobbs, or it could be something different altogether. We haven't made a final decision, but we have some votes for that particular name, Saalbach and Hobbs.
So people could email you with their suggestions?
Why not? Why not? They could email you. You'd be the referee. Why, they could mail it or call in to you, yeah. And you'll make the suggestion to us.
Well, one last thing. Your daughter's at Cornell. She started this last past fall studying wines, and was that in connection with this idea to make wine in the Finger Lakes, or was that kind of independent of it, and Cornell was just the a pretty neat place to go study wine and go to, you know, be an undergraduate?
Well, I'd say that was mainly serendipitous. But to, what good fortune, right? I mean, my daughter grew up in Argentina, and or at least the first 13, 14 years. And then when she came to the States, she decided that she didn't want to stay on the West Coast. She preferred the East because it was more international, and that made her feel more comfortable. So she soon left from California out to Boston area and did 4 years and through finished her high school. And then she wanted to stay on the East Coast. I said, well, you can always come back to the West Coast. So she decided to look around. Well, the program that interested her the most, because she wanted to have some wine, was Cornell. And her grandmother and grandfather also were graduates of the university. So and her grandma grew up in Ithaca. So we have roots here. And that's been great, because my mother is now 84 years old. And so she's been taking my daughter throughout Ithaca and showing various things where she grew up and so on. So I think it's a lovely connection, considering that most of her childhood was in Argentina.
It is. And it's great for Cornell to have her here and that connection. So welcome to the Finger Lakes. And maybe a long and prosperous relationship, and hopefully some of the other folks in the Mosel will come over here and decide to invest too. This is an exciting region right now.
I agree. Happy to be here, and I'm sure there'll be a little more attention and more sniffing around, for sure.
Yeah, the spotlight is growing brighter. And Paul, thank you very much for your time, and can't wait to see how things develop here on Seneca Lake. And congratulations on starting this world-class operation right here in the Finger Lakes.
Well, thank you, Michael, and also thank you for all your support and your great enthusiasm for the area. It's been part of what's really been a motivation for us, and you've helped us greatly in this process, and I want to thank you right now for that.
Yeah, thank you. One last thing, Johannes, I sent you a book a little while ago, Summer in a Glass, and I mentioned in a blog post that I know at least one German winemaker who's read Evan's book, and that had some impact on you, didn't it? And just the stories that were in there.
It reassured me greatly. I mean, the decision was basically made when you gave me the book, but the book really reassured me, and it was great reading. And you know what really, really made it special? Because I met most of the people described in the book afterwards. I brought my staff over here, my key staff, and we had a nice time with Paul's brother David, and my mom came along as well. So we, and you were part of it too, visited many wineries, met wonderful people, tasted very good wine, great hospitality, great camaraderie, and certainly a wonderful atmosphere to feel at home.
All right. Well, 2014 has begun. Thank you very much.
Great pleasure. Thank you.